Hi, everyone. My name is Adam Small.
And I'm Jake Moses.
Welcome to our podcast, The Performer's Pathway.
A podcast adventure to help guide and navigate your musical life and career.
As a prelude to every episode, we'd like to remind our listeners that this podcast is about the other side of the musical coin. One side, which you see a lot at our website, mymusicmasterclass.com, is what to do in the practice room. The other side is how to maximize your talent and skills in the real world, and that's what this podcast is about. Also, if you have a few extra seconds to spare,
which is technically only 3 beats at 60 BPM,
please subscribe to our show on your podcast app of choice and rate us 5 stars. You can leave a comment about absolutely anything, too. That small act of kindness will really help us expand our audience and continue to create new episodes.
And lastly, word of mouth is always super helpful. So if you like what you hear, please tell the world.
All right, so we are here with Ruslan Sirota today. Jake and I are in different rooms, obviously, different houses, because we always are. And I'm in New York, and Jake is in Los Angeles. And Ruslan is also in Los Angeles, but we are all tethered by this thing called the internet. Anyway, how you doing, man?
Well, given the times and the situation, I'd say I'm pretty good, plus.
Right.
Yeah. You know.
It could be worse, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm home. I'm not sick, thank goodness, for now at least.
Right.
So I'll count that as a great, you know.
You're a sick piano player.
Hey, damn. Dude, I had that one coming. I set myself up for that one.
Well, you know.
Thank you.
For those of you who don't know Ruslan, you know, he's a pianist, composer, and producer. He's an insanely talented musician. He's won a Grammy, which is cool. I've heard of those things. He's worked with Stanley Clarke and the Black Eyed Peas, Seal, Josh Groban, Thundercat, Chick Corea, George Duke, Marcus Miller, Al Jarreau, Victor Wooten, Larry Carlton, Los Angeles Philharmonic. I didn't know that one. And just a million others, man. He's super busy and a bad dude.
Man, rent is due, buddy. Rent is due.
Show me the money.
I'll work with whoever can afford me, and I'll go and play it. I'm not, you know, nothing is beneath me. Certainly not the LA Philharmonic, so, you know.
Right. So, as everyone knows, we're in COVID land, and, you know, I'm wondering how you're doing mentally and how you're keeping that shit together. Like, I saw on Facebook, I think that you were in a boat, you're doing some outdoor things. It's nice in Los Angeles right now, I'm sure. Are you doing any exercise, meditation, anything?
I'm meditating every day, and I'm taking little walks every day, and I decided to go out of town for a little bit into nature. But yeah, man, it's really, I mean, I had to sort of create a couple of routines for myself to stay, you know, with it, to stay sane. So I meditate, I walk, I get stuff done. You know, all these projects that you want to do, and you're like, man, I never have the time to do it. And like, yeah, so it's really interesting when life really hands it to you this way. Oh, you don't have the time to do it? Okay, how about all the time that's ever been? You know,
right.
What you got now? And then, you know, to my disgrace, I have to admit that the first few weeks of that, I had to confront that time was never the issue. I just laid around for like 2 weeks and didn't do anything.
Right.
And then
right.
I felt really bad with myself and said, listen, dude, if you don't come out of this pandemic with something that you accomplished and did, then you don't deserve your own talent, or you don't deserve anything. So I kind of guilted myself into starting filming videos and practicing and meditating and taking walks and eating. And did I say eating? Yes, a lot of
eating is good.
I gained like 5 pounds, man. I gained like 5 pounds.
I'm right there with you, man.
So bad.
Have you been using, I don't know like what your meditation practice is like, but Headspace is a pretty cool app.
Headspace is awesome.
And they're doing a free thing, right? For LA?
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's right.
Till December.
I never checked it out. What does it do?
Yeah, they're great. This time, yeah, they're awesome. I think I used them before. It's guided meditation, and they have meditation for every sort of occurrence in life. If you have to decompress, or if you're stressed, if you have bad dreams, if you're trying to go through a breakup, if this and that, they have all of that. They're really awesome.
Oh man,
I'm just starting, so it's I'm like such a beginner. It's hard. I still get super frustrated, you know, yeah. I get to get through that. But
yeah,
it's
I
not,
know
it's not easy.
It's not, and I'm sort of right there with you. I'm like, yeah. I get frustrated, and then I realize that like frustration is just another thought I'm having.
Exactly.
That I should be observing. It's no different yep. from the thoughts that are frustrating me.
Yeah,
it's exactly. actually just another one of them.
When I started meditating, and I'm a little mm-hmm. out of practice at this point, but you know, I got back into it. I periodically just get back into it and go for long times. Mm-hmm. I did the mantra based stuff, and it always resonated with me better than other meditations, but that's just me. And I have friends that do clear your head, and they do the guided meditation and whatever works for you. But for me, it worked because mantra meditation, means you just have to say this sound right until it becomes meaningless. And then along with that, because I did transcendental meditation at the time,
yeah.
They did this whole thing where they say, any thoughts that come into your mind that break you from your mantra, which happens like every 5 seconds,
yeah.
you know, at the first, right? like you just think of that like a stress that has been relieved, and then you gently go back into your mantra. And I always thought that was, if that's bullshit or not, it was the right thing to say to me, because it's like,
oh, that's great.
It's like,
that's great.
It's good for that to happen. Okay,
right.
good.
Yeah,
so a stress exactly. has been released, you know?
Right. You want to frame the inevitable things as good.
Yeah.
Right.
And, because it's true, because, you know, it makes you more calm about the practice. You don't get frustrated. Like, you're basically never supposed to be frustrated, and or else it's super counterintuitive, right? Like, it's not doing anything good for you if you're pissed
right.
that you can't relax.
Totally.
Yeah.
yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's such 100%. A musician. Yeah. It's such a musician trait
yeah.
to just get fucking pissed. Yeah.
That's right. I find it to be a sort of non-resistance. And it's almost kind of counterintuitive. It's when you stop resisting the thoughts and you sort of start observing them as yeah. opposed to being lived out by them.
Yeah.
Which you will be for moments at a time. And that's the sort of practice. It's catching you. And every time you're like, oh, I'm thinking, I'm lost yeah. in thought. Every time you do that, that's a push-up. That's one push-up for that muscle.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah, every time you say, oh, I'm being lived out by the thoughts for no fault, for no willing of my own. Because most people don't realize that the brain works exactly how the liver works. Right? You don't operate, you don't activate your liver, do you? Try to stop your liver. But yet, when we have thoughts, or rather when the mm-hmm. thoughts have us, we somehow mm-hmm. think it's us thinking. And of course, the experiment to fix that is, okay, we'll try to stop thinking, and then you'll see how
you
much in control of yeah, how much in control of that you actually are. And then you humbly realize that your brain works how your kidneys work on their own. It's not, you're not deciding to have thoughts, because here you're not free to stop having them.
Yeah.
And that's okay. Well, that changes everything. Then you start, oh shit, well then I maybe should do something about that.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah, you just legitimately yeah. like, you give them the floor. You're like,
yeah,
the floor yep. is yours for like
yeah.
2 seconds, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I always mm-hmm. found that it's totally human, and you know, it makes us human to have thoughts, and
yeah.
but to have a restless mind is, if we are able mm-hmm. to control, it's definitely beneficial, because it's like you
right.
said, it's very much like breathing. I found that some people, since breathing is involuntary unless you make mm-hmm. it voluntary, most mm-hmm. people don't realize if they're like, like short
right.
breaths and quick. And once you start paying attention, even if you just do that meditation where you're just paying attention to your breath, not trying to lengthen it, just doing anything,
yeah.
all of a sudden it makes your breath better and
yep.
more smooth just by like listening yep. to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So these kind of things yep. are... I mean,
yeah.
And once you realize you're doing these things, or when you realize that you're just thinking about random stressful shit when there's no reason to, it's
no
kind of like, shut up, mind, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Pretty much. That's exactly it. And I think the relationship that most of us have with that, which you just talked about, is that it all goes sort of undistinguished, right?
Mm-hmm.
It all kind of happens without you even knowing that it's going on. It's just kind of in the background, business as usual. And it's painting your responses. It's painting your, you know, your feelings and how you feel about certain situations. And it's painting all of this. And you don't really know, because we don't experience thoughts as thoughts. We experience sort of them as, we don't, it's undistinguished. So like, I'll never forget in one of the meditations I just recently did, he said, if you're like itching, if you want to scratch your back, that's fine. But notice the intention to now lift your head and scratch your back. Catch that thought. So that you don't, so nothing goes undetected. That's kind of, you could really turn your mind in on itself and start detecting what, like, what's that? Because something's always going on, right? There's something always occurring. Like, this is itching, this thought, this sound. And the more of this, and it's kind of mindfulness almost. It's like mindfulness. Yeah, it's just being mindful. But because I scratched my back. But then at that point, I was like, oh, I think I'm about to do this. I have the intention to. And there's that. And it was a whole other experience because it wasn't done on this deadly autopilot that just makes us miserable, right?
Yeah.
And that's the purpose. That's the purpose, is to break that autopilot sort of thing, you know?
Yeah, I opened my eyes in one last night, and I mm-hmm. then I had them closed again, and I was just like, wait, did I just fucking have my eyes open? Like, I didn't even... I was just mm-hmm. like, how did I even do that? I went straight in back into autopilot. Yeah. Like, that's essentially 90% of your life. It's just
if you're lucky. Exactly. Yeah. And so I feel meditation is a way of throwing a monkey wrench into that automaticity and then actually stop being lived out by it.
Yep.
Because truth be told, you'll probably still be lived out by it to some significant extent.
Yeah.
But the less, you gotta give the better, it a go, right?
For sure, mm-hmm. man. Yeah, there's definitely levels to stress. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
but like this is why basically the meditation of musicians would be to fucking record yourself and listen to yourself. It's the same process, God. Dude. Like, get out of autopilot and actually listen to yourself.
Yeah,
and you're like, oh shit, you have to be mindful.
But apparently, but that would cut down on half the musician population because they'd all kill themselves.
No. Yeah, well, still, like, it's funny you should mention it. I recently finished a 7-day challenge. I went on my YouTube channel. And for 60 minutes straight, you know, I got to apply my podcasting software. And for 60 minutes straight, I just improvised by myself.
Shit. Oh,
in front of people. Fucking... Brutal. Yeah. And so,
the Keith Jarrett challenge.
That's what I was going to say. Like,
that's right. Yeah. That's right. That's the key. That's exactly what that is. I love it. And so I did it for 6 days, 7 days. And the sixth day and the seventh day, I feel I scratched some interesting fertile ground, because something happens to your brain when you leave it no way out. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
When, you know, that's why the freedom is in the commitment, sort of. You leave yourself no way out, and then something happens.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's it. I have the challenge that I have to play. It's been 45 minutes. I have 15 more.
That's crazy.
I think
so.
That's
you
great.
Lose focus. Yeah, you lose focus. You come back to focus. You find a motif to develop. You lose it. You get frustrated. Then you start sounding good. Then you start tapping into creativity. Then you tap out of creativity. It's like you go through all these spaces, but like 4, 5, 6 days in, like, hey, buddy, it's not the same experience anymore. And then I have to go listen, and I literally hear what's going on in my head. Oh, see, I was trying to be cool here, trying to play a hip chord, loser. What are you doing? Like, oh, look, I played a phrase and it has a cliche ending, so I'm reaching for the cliche ending because I won't stop for a second and listen to myself inside. Oh, come on, Ruslan. Like, you know, you, because when you hear yourself, like, you hear what you're thinking. You hear why you did what you did.
Oh, you know, like, exactly
you're,
why.
Yeah, you selling out. Stop. So that's exactly like, oh yeah, of course this chord goes to that and it sounds dope, but how many fucking times have you done that? Stop. And then you hear yourself doing that and you have that conversation with yourself, right?
Hence the meditation.
Yeah, so, that's exactly what you mentioned. Yeah.
So wait, so you did this live on Facebook?
Yeah, on YouTube. I have a YouTube channel.
So see, to me, this is going to go back to Jake and I just did a podcast with a psychologist. He's a peak performance psychologist. He deals with like people from Juilliard and the Met and, you know, all kinds of musicians. And that's his forte. And he was talking about when you practice, in order to be able to pull off what you can do in the practice room on the stage, you have to practice in kind of stressful or very real battle-tested conditions.
Yeah.
And that to me... Not only, because to me, the element that makes that cool is you can record yourself and listen back in the comfort of your own home. And that's always good practice and doing 60 minutes. Yeah. That's something that's cool.
And it's, but and it's still fucking terrifying.
Yeah, it's still really hard to listen to yourself. And it's a great, people do that. But putting yourself, you're basically doing a gig now because now other people are watching you. So like, you're on that thing where like, do you want to fall on your face, you know?
Or, that's right.
Or do
the stakes are higher now for you to take risks and chances. For you to take risks and chances will have more sort of negative consequences, but yet you still should be taking risks and chances, and you put yourself in that position by saying, okay, I'm in front of people now. The stakes are there. And now the exercise becomes to sort of, in a way, in the best sort of way possible, to tune them out,
which
is how you want to play on stage. You want to feel their energy, but you don't want to be judging yourself through their ears, right? You want to tune them out in that regard. And so, now playing in front of people on YouTube, it's like, I didn't have thousands of people, but I was like, well, someone might very much dislike this.
Yeah.
You know, and I better not fuck up. And then I'm like, oh, come on, I better stop thinking that. Come on, just play. And then you have to practice all that.
Man, I kind of love that, though, because I feel like there's nothing better almost to do in this quarantine for practice than that, because that is as close as you're going to get to playing in front of people and going for it. That's a great idea.
Yeah, that's what,
and making yourself do it for 60 minutes. Like, if you fucked up and you're not feeling it, like, you can't get out after two choruses.
Too bad. Yeah, too bad.
Yeah, like, you're not like, ah, I'm only going to do a few choruses and I'm going to lay back. Mm. Let the horn player do it.
Yep, I assure you, without some kind of commitment going in that you make publicly, I'll sell out. I'll bail out. I'll do 30 minutes or I'll do 5 days. And it's very, very important. And I find that it's very important to acknowledge this. And I find it a form of arrogance to not be able to admit this about oneself. Because what happens then is like, oh, I don't need to. I can just do it. And of course, you can't. And you won't. And then you try. And then you, of course, fail. And if you don't, then, you know, next time. It doesn't work like that. When you're the doctor and the patient, you are usually going to try to trick yourself out of difficult things, especially very difficult things, which are very good for you. At least I know myself to be this way. And so every champion, every world-class performer in any field will tell you that they don't trust themselves first and foremost. I don't trust. That's why I have a coach for money, coach for sport, coach for food, coach for sleep, coach for business, coach for relationships, coach for everything, because I'm gonna fuck it all up. And it's not because I think and it's not because I think I'm stupid or lazy. It's just because I'm present to an inescapable reality about the human mind, and I'm accounting for it by hiring the proper personnel or placing the proper infrastructure in place, a structure of commitment, so that I won't bail the fuck out, which I will, and so will you, and so will your dad. It's just, it's so important. It's so important to first and foremost understand that willpower is not a button on a remote control. It's a limited resource, and I know it does. And what's the problem? Probably it doesn't feel like it does it. It feels like you could just do it. It feels like if you decide to do it for 4 months, you would just dog. You won't.
All right.
You really, and our dear listener who's pondering on my words, you won't either. If you want something done, find a commitment structure. This is why when people run a marathon, they have the whole thing. Well, if I collect $5,000 for the obese kids or for the Down syndrome kids, then I'm running. Mm-hmm. Because this way, there's something at stake for someone else. And now they place this restriction on themselves, and then they end up running. Otherwise, why bother? Just run the damn marathon. Why do you need to collect money for Down syndrome kids? Because it keeps you accountable. It keeps you. You have to do it now. It's like it's such an important concept. You know?
Yeah, I mean, I think that for the doubter, the listener that's doubting, we should send that listener.
We should
send that listener a Domino's pizza with a six pack and an Xbox. And also tell them that what they really need to do for the next half hour is make 3 cold calls to get their music placed for television. They have to call the producers and the music supervisors. And I don't know. I say 2% of people make the calls.
That's right. That's right. What a great experiment. I perfectly agree. It's perfectly illustrating what I was trying to say. And like, it's a matter of incentive. Because for instance, if that doubter on the other end that's listening to us, if someone said, look, we're going to shoot your family if you don't do it, right? They would have no issue whatsoever to do it. They would do it gladly.
Like but Ozark style, yeah.
Of course, right. So the whole thing is that when it comes to making phone calls and cold calls about your music, the incentive is never that. high, right? Nope. It's never that. Like, it's not even as high as paying rent, is it?
No, not even close. It's kind of like, I could do it tomorrow or next week. Yeah.
So it's a matter of incentive. Yeah, sure, if your dad's going to get shot, you'll do it. But it will never be like that. No one will ever tell you, book a festival gig or we're going to shoot your dad, right? So it's just the incentive is not there. And it's not urgent. That you could always do it tomorrow. And then that's what happens. And that's such an important reality to be awakened to, I think, you know.
Yeah, man, I dig that. I like how this is starting off. That's some important shit.
Yeah, I mean, that's the story of my life. I fucked around. Like, if I got a penny for every year I fucked around, I'd have a lot of pennies.
Well, unfortunately, you had some talent too, so that's even worse, right? Yeah.
You know that that's actually even worse, right? You know that what you just said is actually true,
it's
right?
More you're procrastinating more when you're talented sometimes.
Yeah, I can get away with shit. I can get away with shit.
I still have practice awards for when I was a kid, just from straight up faking it because I was good enough to just fake it out on the teacher.
It's very easy to make light of what you guys are saying.
No,
it's
I'm with you, man.
It's not a joke. It's exactly like that.
Which actually is kind of funny because I find that the really talented people have more trouble in the music business, not in terms of being badasses, but in terms of like networking, getting gigs, like showing up to rehearsals, like knowing all the tunes, like, you know, stuff like that you have to do in the professional world because they're just used to getting by on...
Exactly.
Not that that's even the case. There's plenty of talented people that are super professional, but I feel like...
This is my case. Ever since I was a little kid, I was in Soviet Union winning classical awards.
Yeah.
Then I got into jazz and I got into, you know, I started winning awards and being like the advanced whatever ensemble, and I got a full scholarship to Berkeley. Dude, you know what happened when I was 19 years old? It was the first time reality sort of served me like a cold sort of wake up, sort of, you know, like a bucket of cold water. Oh, well, I tell people this in interviews all the time. I moved to Boston to go to Berkeley, and I was 19. I was pretty sure I'm, if not the best, among the best things that happened to jazz music, probably. and no, I'm exaggerating, but yeah, I was somewhat full of myself. I had a full scholarship. They were paying for my housing. You know, I could kind of play. I could kind of play. And then, of course,
you came from were you Tel Aviv or Jerusalem?
Yeah, right outside Tel Aviv.
Right.
And like, I mean, there were some good kids in my school. There were some good, like, you know, there's some great kids, but like, I'm at the very least one of them. God damn it.
Yeah.
You know? as it happens, I was moved in to be roommates with Walter Smith III, who was a saxophone player you might have heard of.
Yeah.
And so so Walt was 19, I was 19. And so, of course, you know, I was really good. And then, you know, Walter was, you know, Walter already then. So, you know, he took me to a jam session. I'm like, hey, you want to go to the jam? It's like the first night I'm there. I'm like, yeah, fuck yeah, I want to go. I'm like, I hope this kid is good. I
was, like, you know, Molly's or something?
Oh, no, it was the Wonder Bar.
Right.
It was Walter Smith, Kendrick Scott on drums, Warren Wolf on vibes. I think they're anyway, just monsters.
Yeah, all of them.
Just monsters. And they, you know, I sat in on a blues and, you know, they wiped the fucking floor with me and sort of, and I was just kind of dumbfounded and like, it was shocking. It was traumatizing. It was, you know, sobering.
Yeah.
And this is to tie it back to the conversation in terms of, one of the reasons this happened is because I never had to confront anything like this. I was the best shit.
Yeah.
I was the best shit, and I got very far being that. I mean, for a kid. And then, of course, you move to a place like this, and, like, you know, you're not even in the top five.
Right.
I'm like, wow. And so, I mean, that really messed me up. Just if you think these were the only consequences of the Wunderkind thing, I stopped practicing, dude, for 2 years. I stopped practicing after that night, and I started smoking weed and listening to Dave Matthews with a bunch of hippie kids. Because
Dave Matthews goes hand in hand. It's kind of he's a gateway drug to weed.
Right. Yeah. I was so, it's like, it's a crush. It's a crash of a reality.
Crash. Yeah.
Oh, grass. That's right. No. All right, Dave Matthews. Dave Matthews references. Here we go.
Oh man.
So what? This is going kind of back to your breathing and your meditation and all that stuff. But do you do anything before you do a gig? And this is pre-corona, whatever. Mm-hmm. Is there things that you do to settle your mind and get ready?
You know, for most of my life, I had no
ritual
or anything of that sort. What happened is the gigs became meditation, because at some point, when you play so many in a row, a year, every year, what happens is it's something similar to my 60-minute challenge of improvising. It's just you bombard your brain with input. And the brain is wired in such a way, it's going to try to sort things out to make things easier for you. And then if you need 53 laps, it's okay. You have 140 more coming. It's like you'll have plenty of time. Like, my brain needs 53 more laps to figure this out. Okay, we'll have 80 more laps coming anyway. So it's like you make the most pathetic progress mentally, and most embarrassing small tiny steps, but you just do it so many times that even those embarrassingly small steps kind of add up to some sort of insight or self-control. And these days I can usually psych myself out of any kind of anxiety or stress, barring perhaps my own, when I fall into my own ruts and start playing the same dumb shit I always play. And okay, so that's where I'm kind of at. That's what I'm trying to psych myself out of. And that's sort of the challenge of the day for me, and perhaps of the decade, really. But in terms of like anxiety and stuff, dude, I mean, fucking, you know, over 2,700 shows into it. It's when many of those were done in a row, year after year after year. Like, you kind of let that go. And then it's like, okay, can I really stream in such a way that my fingers are playing and I'm sort of just looking from above and correcting course here and there, but it's really just streaming. That's where I'm kind of at. And that's, you know, I succeed and then I don't succeed and then I don't succeed again. And that's how it goes.
Well, that kind of enlightenment is, it's difficult to be that on all the time. I mean, I guess, I doubt that I could find any musician at any level that would say otherwise. And even the ones that you hear from the outside and say, man, they're always on. Like Brecker would say he sucked every night, right?
Yeah, yeah. See, I always wonder, right, Brecker would say he sucked. But then, you know, I mean, Brecker was also known for being, you know, on the one hand, just pathologically hardworking. And, you know, on the other end, just like unexplainably, you know, hard on himself.
Right.
Meanwhile, you know, two generations are trying to literally sound as close as him to him as possible. And he is saying he sucks. So, I mean, I'm not really sure what to make of that.
Exactly. You know? Well, yeah, it's his thing.
There's a lot of figures throughout history, like Bill Evans and Cat.
Right.
Like that,
yeah.
Which is
that's right.
Nonstop fucking judgment.
That's right. That's right. There's always something. I mean, and I know the feeling. I think what happens is even some of the works of mine that have been recorded and documented that I can actually stomach to listen to and I think are pretty decent, even in those, I could find plenty of wrong, right? Yeah. Because it's never like, oh my God, it's like I designed this ahead of time. Unless you write your own solo ahead of time and then, yeah, you did design it, but then it's lacking a certain maybe spontaneity and a certain spirit. So you never really... And so, of course, the goal is to do it in real time as though it's been composed.
Yeah, man.
Right? It has all the structure and all the resolution and all the tension and release and all the development of themes and all the chapters that a movie would have and all the descriptions of this and descriptions of that and all the close-up scenes and all the scenic shots and all the dialogue and all the monologue and all the chase scenes and all of that stuff. And, well, you know, good luck with that shit. That shit's fucking hard.
Yeah, man. You know? I'm with you,
dude. I can count on one hand the solos that are recorded that I can even say I got even somewhat close to that at all.
Right.
Yeah.
And that is to say I didn't, but like I was well on my way and then failed along the way somewhere or something. I could even count those incomplete, not great ones on one hand. You know?
Let me change subjects because this is something that was really interesting and we talked about in your masterclass, and in other times, I think. But you know, you're a versatile cat, and we talked a bit about this. I mean, you did the Josh Groban gig, which is basically classical piano, and obviously Stanley Clark, and you play with a lot of straight ahead stuff, and you play with a lot of Thundercat. You do the bridging, the R&B stuff. You do it all, and you even talked about in the video the, you know, playing gospel style and the rolling and all these different things and really understanding the nuances. Like, how do you feel that your versatility helped you in Los Angeles or, you know, in your career? And do you have any advice for other musicians about this?
Well, I think it's a type of person. It's a type of musician. Mm-hmm. I'm also, if you think about it, like, I'm an immigrant. We moved from the Soviet Union to Israel. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, that's a big change. And from Israel to the United States, I'm the Jewish sort of Eastern European immigrant. And it's almost like our gig in this world to sort of show up to the place, figure out what the fuck they're doing over here, and try to do it better than they do it so that we get ahead somehow and not get stomped on and die. So I've always sort of had to do that. I this is why when I moved, and I'll get to the direct response to your question. I'm giving you a little bit of background that I think is the root of what you're actually speaking of. And so I moved, when I moved to Israel, I didn't really want to have any Russian friends as a kid. Okay. And I,
you
when
spoke
I moved
Hebrew
to the States,
going in though, right?
Nope.
Oh shit.
Nope. No, sir. And then when I moved here to the States, I didn't really want to have a lot of Israeli friends because I don't know, I might as well stay there. So I'm all sort of designed, and this is going to bring us back around to your question. I'm kind of wired to try to figure out the subtleties that make something what it is. And it's, of course, always the subtleties, isn't it, right? Mm-hmm. It's always the subtleties that make something sound very, very, very authentic. And so while I think I generally always fell short of the original, I think I did a pretty good job getting pretty close in a lot of areas. Mm-hmm. Do you see what I'm saying? The way I would describe myself, I really am the jack of all trades, and I really don't know that I'm necessarily, if I be honest, a king of any of them. Okay, so like a jazz guy, right? Like you think of someone like, I think of someone, I don't know, like Aaron Parks, right?
Yeah.
Or like I don't think I play jazz as good as fucking, you know, Aaron Parks. I'm pretty sure I don't. And like, if you think of gospel, you think of, I don't know, Eddie Brown.
Yeah.
Or Corey or any, like, I don't think I play gospel as good as those guys. Are you crazy?
It's kind of their bag.
But I think I play gospel much better than Aaron Parks. And I probably play jazz better than the other guys too.
Right. I see what you're saying.
See? Yeah. Right. So
you're saying that you're at a like an 8 out of 10 on everything.
Oh God, I wasn't gonna go that high. I'm good enough to work.
Right.
Like, if you put me on a gospel gig, I'll play the gig and it'll be awesome. It'll be great. It won't be the best you've ever heard.
Right.
It won't. Like, if you put Eddie on it, it'll be the best you've ever fucking heard, and you'll shit yourself. If you put me on it and let me practice, I'll play some shit. But it won't be as good as Eddie. It won't be as good as Corey. It won't. You understand? Like, just won't. And if you put me on a jazz gig, like, and let me get in and let me warm up and tour and get the tune, I'll play good solos. I'll have a story. I'll try to have a story. I'll try to tell. I have harmonic language. I have a lot of shit, but it won't be as good as Aaron Parks, I don't think. Or, you know what I'm trying to say? I'm trying to be a little maybe overly specific because I'm trying to sort of drive this point
home. I understand
home.
What you're saying.
Yeah.
And those guys like Aaron Parks or like Fred Hirsch.
I don't know that he could. I don't know that. Yeah. I don't know that Aaron could play with Kirk Franklin the way that he's supposed to when it's just him and Kirk Franklin. I probably could.
Right.
But again, it'll be probably better. And again, I'm pretty sure Aaron could do it if he put his mind to it. But that's precisely it, isn't it? He never really put his mind to it because he didn't have to. He was busy digging the jazz hole deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper.
Yeah.
And working, he's probably my favorite pianist of my generation. Are you kidding me?
He's the man.
Yeah, so it's like, that's what I'm kind of saying. If what's, I guess, halfway sort of decent about me is I managed to excel at these different genres beyond the point where I suck, right? I'm not maybe Aaron Parks or Eddie Brown, but I do what they both do to a level where I could work, you know, at a wedding or at Monterey Jazz Festival or, you know, or somewhere like that. Like I, and that's why I've sort of stayed working. I've managed to bring all these things up to speed enough that people decide to somehow, for some reason, give me money for doing it. And so,
and you can program too, which is important.
And I can program, right? I was into dubstep for a couple of years, and I have like an album that I did that, and it doesn't sound like Bud Powell made a dubstep record, you know?
That like, man, that sounds like the best thing I ever heard.
I know, me too, me too. Exactly.
I want to hear Bud's fucking dubstep record.
yeah,
exactly. Or like Art Tatum.
Yep, exactly. Imagine what shit. I mean, dude, imagine what the hell they'd be making with this damn technology right now. Who knows?
It could be sick.
Right? So it could be pretty awesome.
Yeah, or, you know, because they're such virtuosos, like you said, they'd probably just be in the jazz hole, owning it. You
or,
know what I mean?
Or that. Or, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Actually, yeah. Sorry, maybe a tad bit counterintuitive, but they could well bypass this whole thing and be done with it. Yeah, that's very possible as well.
It's tricky, man. Yeah.
Yeah, it's and so I never really, you know, at festivals, like, it'll be really weird. Like, I'll run into Lady Gaga's band at a Monterey Jazz, or like, oh, no, I'll never forget this. This is funny. The first time I played the Monterey Jazz Festival was in 2007, and it was with Seal.
Right.
So Seal, you know, these festivals are now, you know, at that point had started bringing pop artists, so they could pay the other jazz artists some money so they could generate, right? So I was at Monterey Jazz Festival, and of course, all my jazz buddies are there, you know, playing in front of, you know, maybe smaller crowds, but playing the music they want to play. Like, I was there with Seal, so I was with Seal's band, and, you know, and all of a sudden, I'm like saying hello to all these people at the hotel, and Seal's band is looking at me like, what? Like, I'm like, yeah, these are my jazz friends. I know these guys from Berkeley, from Boston, from New York, from like this one gig or this other gig. And it kind of hit me. I'm like, I mean, aside from the fact that I was playing the Monterey Jazz Festival with Seal, from that, it was just like, yeah, I'm kind of, it's kind of weird, isn't it? And then, of course, it was weird. So who are you here with, Ruslan?
Right.
Not anyone you would find. Yeah. Cool.
I'm with Jack Dechanet.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not. Let me just tell you guys, I'm not here with Jack Dechanet.
And Seal is great for, you know, in that awesome genre. It's just you. I know. It was a jazz thing. You were in jazz.
Yeah. Right. I'm like, damn. And then I'm like, we're gonna come check you out. I'm like, I mean, you can, but you're not gonna, you know, you're not gonna be checking me out. You're gonna be, you know, it's not gonna be like that. But so it's kind of been my career, and at this point it's been long enough that I'm pretty much okay, that's kind of what it is, you know. That's
But you've done a lot of the improvisational stuff too, though, you know. I mean, you have that record with Chick Corea's on it, you have a lot of special guests. You also were in Stanley Clark's band for a while. Where you won the Grammy, right?
Yeah, of course. I always sort of, I never wanted to abandon that stuff, and if I abandoned it for too long, I would be miserable, you know. I always wanted to, and the guys wanted to help, and Chick wanted to help, and Stanley always wanted to help, and so they kind of played on it. I was going to drop my first record, and they're like, whatever, we'll just help you, just fucking drop it already, just do something, right? Instead, just, you know, enough playing, you know, sideband gigs, just do something. I found that for me, it was more of a maturing of the mind, sort of, you know, like I had to arrive. Thinking back at that record, I don't think I was in the mind frame of an artist at all. I just wanted to do a solo thing, but I didn't really have a concept of what I am or what I want to explore. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, I was just like, I want to play some improvised music that, you know, I don't have to back up fucking, you know, Michael Bolton or someone. And I think I'm going to do it with Chick Corea and George Duke and Stanley Clark, and then play some on my own and do some, like, if you listen to that first record, self-titled, right, Ruslan, mm-hmm. it's pretty much a Greek salad. it's pretty much salad. You see where I'm really coming from. I have this in me. I have some of that in me and some of the other in me. And oh, there's a little Coldplay. Oh, shit. There's a little. Oh, there's Chick Corea on a song. Yeah. Oh, whoa. What the fuck? Oh, there's. So it's kind of like that. So, and little did I know, of course, the guys at the time knew all of that. Just the way they look at it is like the sooner you start releasing, the sooner you get on your path and start
like
figuring
focusing your vision, yeah.
Yeah, figuring your juvenile ass out. You know, like just get on with it already. Just release whatever. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be your best record, we promise. Like,
right.
just do it so you could get to your next one, which will be better, and it right. was. And so I'm halfway through the third one now.
Yeah, man.
And it's even better as far as I can tell because I'm more focused. I know a long list of things not to do, short list of things to do, and challenge myself in the right ways and put myself in uncomfortable environments in the exact right ways and unfamiliar musical contexts that should elicit something new out of me that I'm not already sick of in myself.
Mm-hmm.
And so yeah, they just wanted to help. Okay, get it out. What do you want? Do you want me to play on it? Great, whatever. Here, I'll play on it.
Who's the new record with? Who's on this one?
Well, the recent, the 2019. Well, a lot of it is Gary Novak on drums.
Yeah,
John Patitucci was a sweetheart and did it and actually helped me out a lot.
Yeah.
Bob Mincer. Oh man. Yeah. Nice. Bob Mincer played on a couple of songs. Also, you know, who else? Stanley played on some stuff. Mm-hmm. And a bunch of other cats. Dino Soldo played on harmonica. A bunch of different people, and then the orchestra of strings and horns and stuff.
Is nice. Patitucci an upright?
Yeah.
Man, you know, it's so crazy because I mean, I'm 45, so we're similar age. And mm-hmm. you know, when I was young, listening to Chick Corea, the electric band. You know, Patitucci, like, of course he played upright, but I knew him at first as an electric player because I was an electric player. And, you know, he's such a good upright player. And it almost, I mean, I saw him recently. He played with a friend of mine at Smoke, David Hazeltine recently, and because it was going to be Ron Carter on the gig and then Patitucci subbed, which you can't really go bad. You're right, wrong with that.
Right.
And it was Al Foster on drums, you know.
Oh,
it was
terrible, this, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Good band. And
where did they get these losers?
Exactly.
Oh, man.
And Patitucci was just, I mean, he's so solid and great, but his soloing is ridiculous. Like,
dude,
it's so silly. You know what I mean? Because it's not just a technique thing, but it's just so melodic and beautiful. And it's kind of impossible to do that on upright. I mean, I don't know.
I mean, good enough for what, Wayne Shorter?
Exactly.
Right? And that's really, I find, to be the common denominator of all the greats. It's
right.
really a combination of just, not always, but often technical mastery, genuine. With just, and this next one is always, that's not up for debate, with just such strong conceptual sort of understanding of so many things on the conceptual level of how things should unfold, how things should evolve, how solos should progress, how to comp without interrupting but with saying something. How, like, all the greats have this conceptual stuff together, which is what makes them great. And some of them don't have insane technique.
No.
For instance, like Patitucci clearly does, but you know, some other players,
but like Grant Green didn't, and Stan Getz didn't really have like lightning chops.
I don't know that Herbie has lightning chops.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know that Herbie Hancock has a technique of, I don't know, Hiromi,
like
Oscar Peterson, or even like, I don't know that Herbie has that guy.
No,
and if you
but
ask
he's
Herbie,
so melodic, it just doesn't matter.
Oh, my
he's
God.
He gets, he gets into your mind and just, like, mind fucks you. Like, he's
oh,
that
he's
kind
so
of player.
And that's,
I mean?
And that's the second thing I said, the conceptual stuff. That's always there.
Yeah.
That's what makes them great. That's like, I mean, Herbie doesn't need it. He obviously has good technique.
Yeah.
But if you ask him, he'll tell you he hasn't practiced in years and years and years.
Yeah.
He's happy to share that. Like, how would he have technique if that's the case, you know?
He's just thinking it up in his head,
It's just the concept shit, the melodic shit, the black versus white tension versus release shit is so hooked up. Like, that's like, God, just he plays that one, same chord and the notes in that chord and the time he played it and everything he didn't play around it. Just like, just, you know, or Monk, Thelonious Monk. That wasn't particularly technically stellar executionist right there. But, you know.
Hey, let me ask you a random question for just my own sanity. Are you doing any of the potato gigs, like live stream? Do you have anything booked with those cats?
Nothing booked. I think there was something in the talks about perhaps sometime in June. I think I talked to Bob Reynolds.
Have you watched
about
one
it.
At all? Have you watched
I have
like, the live
I've still yet I've yet to do that. I want to go check it out. How many have they had so far?
I think I want to say two. I know maybe like last week was their first. But yeah, I want to. I got to check one out. But yeah, I wondered if you were.
Yeah, I want to do it. I want to do it as well. And if it's safe medically, I'm happy to help. I'm not. You know, if we can make it such that no one has to risk too much.
Yeah.
I'm absolutely. I mean, that's like our second home. We, you know, even when you don't play potato, we just go there and hang out sometimes.
I mean, that's the thing. Like, things are at that point now where it's kind of getting like, oh fuck. Like we need to start figuring some shit out because these clubs aren't going to be around much longer.
Right. And they've been around for a long time.
Yeah. I wouldn't want to see the spud go, dude. I would not want that.
No. Well, let me jump back into something you were talking about before. Mm-hmm. You were talking about what you're doing now, and I know I've talked to you about this recently. You said you're making videos, but tell the audience, you know, like what you're doing. You're making your lesson website, right? How is this going to be formed?
Well, here's the thing. A couple of years ago, I started. I'm a very sort of. I'm a kind of an opinionated dude about a lot of things, and and so I started making videos on YouTube about like the things that made me want to rip my eyeballs out. That why doesn't anyone talk to musicians about this? Like, did you know that all of your phrases start on beat one, beat two, and beat three end? For example, have you ever noticed that about yourself?
Right.
Or have you noticed that, you know, or, like, have you ever noticed that, for instance, when you play, most of your phrases are medium length and long, never short phrases. Do you know that about yourself? Right. Do you know that about yourself, that blah, blah, etc.? And so I started giving sort of remedies because this is the stuff that I was lucky enough to pick up from the great, sort of tremendous musician and tremendous educator, Hal Crook, who was teaching at Berkeley. Great. And I studied with Hal, and Hal opened my eyes on a lot of this kind of stuff that just sort of goes in under the radar.
Right, and you talked about like phrasing over the bar line too. That was one we talked
about.
Or
that, do you know that every time a new chord comes, you start your fucking phrase in the downbeat of the chord.
Right.
Well, how about you group three chords per phrase and then start every three chords? Like, so stuff like that, and then I started making videos, and to my surprise, how to play over chord changes, stuff like. To my surprise, there was a fairly positive, not gigantic, tremendous response, but a very diehard sort of nucleus of people.
Mm-hmm.
I have about 12,000 followers right now. It's not a lot, but
that's healthy.
And I stopped making videos about a year ago. I'm pretty sure I would have had a lot more. And the videos keep attracting that sort of person who is sort of either, you know, there's a couple, but there's a really good nucleus of like intermediate players who can kind of play and don't play wrong notes anymore, but they still kind of sound whack, like, which has been the story of my life. Like, I never
sounds
played
like they're reading
bad.
A real book or something,
right? Yeah, just like it's all right, it's fine, you're playing the right notes, but it's as exciting as a wet carrot, and like it's like. And like, and
how
so
wet?
That's been my right. Oh, that there you go. And what kind of carrot, right? Music is a very abstract field, right? Where it seems that nothing can be quantified. It's all feeling and sort of spirit, and that is undoubtedly true. Except there's a lot more quantifiable stuff than one might assume, right? And so there is no need to take something as esoteric as music and make it more esoteric than it absolutely has to be, right? You want to be as you know, if there is anything you could figure out with a method, okay, or do this, that'll help with that, right? if you can do something like that, I'm sort of a fan of doing that. So like I have videos of, like, if you want to learn how to play on chord changes, here are some exercises you could do on chord changes. Just shut the fuck up and do them and report back in 7 weeks. And you know, they report back in 7 weeks and they are shitting themselves, like, oh my God, are you serious? So up until a year ago, I was making those videos for a while and I was happy. And then what started to happen is the YouTube algorithm fell out of love with me and I stopped getting as many subscribers as I used to when I thought I kept releasing content that's still very good. And so it started exposing me to a lot less people. So I said, well, fuck it. I don't give a shit. But people still kept subscribing based on the videos that I did release, because my sort of back, my payback was that I was getting a lot of subscribers for this meticulous, insane, detailed hard work I was putting into every video with graphics and illustrations. And
yeah,
and
it seems, you know, like a lot of stuff.
Yeah, so I was like, well, if I'm not getting my 100 subscribers a day, I'm going to be spoiled about it and, like, take my ball and go home. which is maybe, you know, stupid. But you know, that's just what I did, and I had a bunch on my plate at the time. So now I started going live on YouTube and answering people's questions. I still have about 12,000 subscribers. That's still a lot of people. If I go live, I get about 65, 70 people, you know, hopping on to ask questions. Mm-hmm. And then hundreds more watching it later after it's been live.
Right.
And so that's not a lot at all, but it's, you know, it's something. And I'm just starting there. And I'm like, well, okay, well, in one of my live videos, I'm like, how about, would you guys like buy, because for instance, like, you like this topic, how about I make 2 hours on this fucking topic and it'll be a course and not a video. Mm-hmm. And I'll charge whatever dollars for it. Would you guys buy it?
Right.
They're like, yeah, fuck yeah, we buy it. Are you kidding? So I don't know how many actually will. Mm-hmm. Time will tell. But then, of course, I'll be able to put smaller sort of teaser videos on my channel and give people value, not just tease them. Actually give some value and say, well, okay, you see this 10-minute, 12 minutes worth of value? Okay, there's, you know, 103 more minutes of this much value for an affordable price of whatever, right? And so some percentage of those people undoubtedly will purchase, and of course, you know, a large percent won't. And I'll just try to build this way, you know. I'm not a millionaire. I don't have a staff of 50 people I have to pay and 3 mortgages and 5 properties. I don't necessarily need to generate $80,000 a month to just survive.
Right.
Like some people, right? I mean, if I could just have this be a source of income,
right?
And then keep playing on people's records like I do now, and keep producing records like I do now, and keep doing occasional tours here and there. Shit, that's great. I'll take that life.
I just actually looked at that page. I subscribed. You have a lot of shit, dude. That's a lot of stuff, man.
I have a lot of shit. Yeah, I mean, if you're into music,
I'm checking that shit out.
Yeah, man. And like, I have a video that's surpassed, what I think, what, 110,000, 120,000 views, where how to play on chord changes. Somehow everyone fell in love with that video because everyone's trying to figure it out. And no, everyone's like so fucking woo-woo about it. Where me with my Russian stern ass, like, okay, here's what you do. You play chord changes like this. And like, I mean, it's funny, but like a big part of me is kind of like that because that's where I'm from. I'm like, here's what you do. You do this, and you don't do this, and you don't argue. And now do this. Do this, and you'd be surprised. People are dying for clear instructions that will actually yield results. You know?
Yeah.
But like, I'm not like, and you click, you feel me like this. No, not like this. Like here. Do this from this note, and like, and okay. Like, you'd be surprised how much work people are willing to put in if they only know what the fuck they should be doing. But like,
and what they're going to get out of it.
And yeah, exactly. Well, rather, I should have said it how you said it. What the fuck they should be doing in order to surely get something out of it. Right. That's the way to put it. You're right. So, and so I started, like, well, why don't I start a school? I can keep making free videos. I have over 50. And, you know, I get subscribers every day. It's not as many as I'd like, but, you know, it's growing. And I'm going to, why don't I start a school? Because, I mean, if you go through my videos, I mean, I'm sure I'm not the only person on YouTube getting such comments. I'm sure there's other people. But a lot of the comments is people wondering why I don't charge for this shit.
Yeah,
I know.
Because, like, the videos I did for my music masterclass, right? Like, I didn't do those on a higher level and, like, held back on my free videos, right? No.
Yeah.
No. I just here. take it.
Information, yeah, man.
And so people were like, why are you not charging for this? I'm like, well, because I guess I'm not fucking broke enough to wake up yet. So, yeah. And then I turned, you know,
and then all of a sudden the world ended.
And then I turned broke enough to wake up, and I woke up and I was like, I'm a moron. I should be, I mean, what if I make some, you know, what if I just make rent doing this?
Right.
Like, yeah. Which is not a lot of money for fucking a business at all. But whatever. Hey.
Well, what software are you using? I mean, are you using WooCommerce, or how are you setting this site up?
Here. I'm now in the research of building that. And maybe I can talk to you after the interview about
this.
Oh,
I don't
know
anything. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, no, I know a lot of that. So.
Yeah, you, of course, you don't know anything. Why would you? You thought, like,
if
you
I know anything,
school.
I do know that.
Right. So I talked to Yannick Wasdala about this.
He knows it, too.
And he knows some stuff. So he knows a lot of stuff.
He taught Bob Reynolds, and Bob Reynolds did his, just like Yannick's.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. And so I'm happy to talk to you, dude. And it didn't even hit me, because if there's anyone who's even heavier into this business than my boy, it's probably you.
Yeah, you know? I mean, it just depends on how far you want to go. It can be a rabbit hole, and I would suggest, as Yannick will tell you, because he did it himself, keep it as simple as you can. I mean, I'm hip to the newest stuff, and it just depends.
Am I going to learn C++? Am I going to have to become
a
programmer?
No, please no.
Please tell me it's a fucking drag and drop bullshit.
I love how musicians just think of the worst, because it's like,
it's C++.
That one day I wanted to learn a triad when I was 4 years old. And,
right, you know, and I'm still trying. Right?
Yeah. Right.
You're going to have to learn advanced JavaScript and PHP, though. No, I'm just kidding.
Whoa, no.
You do need to know a few things, or you hire someone to help, but I know kind of some ins and outs of that.
Yeah, I know some HTTP.
Right.
I know
kind of what
HTTP.
You need to know.
Yeah, I figured,
And like, I mean, PHP is kind of a bitch. Like, CSS is easy to work with. Like, you can find out what's wrong and hide things, change colors of things, move placements of pictures, like if they're wonky. But if the basic thing is, if you can work in WordPress and get a theme that's close.
That's tough, man. WordPress, huh?
No, it's not that hard.
Face?
I know, you made
For
a face.
All you listening out there.
Yeah, there was a face.
Made a face.
I gave you the WordPress face. Because to me, if it's not Squarespace or like Wix, like then I have to know. But then I can't really do it there, because they don't really have. Because what I need is people to open accounts.
Yes.
And each account has access to an X number of courses.
Correct.
And doesn't have access to a Y number of courses until they pay for another one. And then they have access to that course, too. I don't think Wix is going to give me that anything. No.
I mean, I'll explain a little bit on the podcast, just because maybe it'll be interesting to someone. But
oh, dude, we're a bunch of starving musicians. Everyone's going to do this sooner or later. Give me a break.
Exactly.
Woo, commerce.
Hopefully, I know. So basically, if you're using something like WordPress and you use WooCommerce, which is a really big platform, they have things built in and extensions that you can use to kind of monitor or add anything that you want to add. For instance, bundling products together, sales, memberships, anything. And all these things have myriad of options, and there's a lot of things like that. You can also get themes that I'm talking about this as if you don't want to code anything. So,
starting from there. Yeah.
And
no coding, yep.
I mean, we coded a bunch of stuff on our site, but you don't have to. Like, I've also done sites, the site we did for Performers Pathway, I did in WordPress, and a theme, and the theme was close enough and I could modify it with what I know. But I originally built the site for my music masterclass, but when we redid it, I was, I didn't want to do it. And I wanted to get someone that was better than me to do it. So I hired some really good developers.
Is it really expensive? It's really expensive, isn't it?
It's not. It depends on what start with. I mean, I'll explain it to you. But basically, what you want to do is, if you're using WordPress, which is, it gives you more customization, because if you're using something like Squarespace or Wix, I find that you're always, it looks really good.
Stuck
and you're like,
with
oh,
what
this
they
is
have.
Dope. This is dope. And then all of a sudden you're like,
there's a
why
wall.
Can't I do that one thing that I really
because
need
that's
to do?
Not, yeah, that's right. That's right.
You know?
That's right.
You're
yeah.
like, I can't like make people do this, and I want to do this. And they're like, oh, no, you can't do that. You know?
We didn't take that into account because almost no one needs this. Yeah. So we didn't put it there.
Yeah.
Right?
And you're like 60 days into like creating the perfect site, you know. But when it comes down to it, if you get a theme and there's places to shop for themes, they're inexpensive, you know, somewhere between like $10 and $40. And lifetime, you know, of this theme. You get something that's close visually to what you want. And
I take you to lunch from like webcam lunch and yeah, your brand?
Can you make anything good over there and just send it over?
I'll have it right over. Yes.
Are you guys going to be eating Israeli food? I want to be invited to this.
Dude, if I cook for you, you'll never give me any advice for the rest of your life or have me on a podcast.
You can't make hummus?
Unless you're into some fucking Trader Joe's fucking pre-canned, pre-done shit, hook that shit up.
I have a cultural question your face reminded me of.
Should I already be offended or should I wait?
Yeah, you can be.
He's Lebanese, so should definitely be offended.
Oh, so right. we drink Arak. And every time
Arak, yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm. So every time I give it to any of my like not, you know, brown friends, they
give
make
it up.
Face. That's so bad.
Give up on it. Don't even do that. I tried. It's not.
It's
nah.
so good though. It's so
of course.
Good.
It's a licorice. It's like licorice. It's like you have to really be into that flavor.
What
but
is it?
If you have
I don't know that.
It's way stronger.
Way stronger. And unless your neighbor gave it to you when you were 14. And like,
which
and
may or may not it, have happened.
Yeah. Have happened, right? Yeah. And so, and you've been having it ever since with your Iraqi friends and your Moroccan yep. friends. Yeah. I don't think you stand a chance of even acquiring it as a taste.
No, but it's always that same face that you made when Adam said WordPress. That was
right.
But you know, static face.
Because when I think WordPress, I think nothing is preset or almost nothing. You have to know what the fuck you're doing.
No,
maybe that changed.
There's ways around. It and it's getting mm-hmm, easier yeah. and I can what we'll do is we'll have a consult, you know, I'll talk to you, man. But you know what, it comes full circle, Russell, to what you're saying about, you know, you can't take the easy path, man. You gotta like, you know, you gotta make it happen.
I have no intention. That's right. I have every intention of being the 8 out of 10 of websites. Just like I have
that's
with
a good
everything
score
up.
Man, that's a very good. I think Trustpilot would rate you well.
Right,
he'll be in Forbes magazine.
That's right he is the almost guy of websites. Right, yeah, you should exactly. Almost subscribe to him.
He almost knows HTML.
And then go, you know, almost subscribe and then go to my music masterclass and actually give your credit card.
All
yeah,
right.
No, but I mean, you killed it. That shit, I mean, to be honest with you, no lip service. That's such a wealth of knowledge for relatively affordable. And I mean, the guys you have on there, I mean, just so you know, like the Russell Ferrante one you had.
Yeah, they're amazing.
Like,
I love those.
If they were VHS tapes, I would have asked you for another copy by now because I would have worn them out.
Yeah.
Like, it's just
he's an encyclopedia, man.
Oh, my
and he's just such
God.
A. He's just got this great stuff in his head, man, flying around.
And he's a sweetheart.
The best.
And the best, sweetest, most supportive person. And truly, to me, I know he's famous and everything, but like, even with all that, the genuine unsung hero to me. I mean, he should.
Yeah.
The guy is like. Yeah. I he's famous and the jackets are known. I know he made it in his life, but for my money, man.
He's got a voice, man. He's got a voice if you've ever had one. You know, he's
to
got
me,
one.
He's every bit as recognizable as Chick Corea.
Yeah.
Every bit as recognizable as anyone
as
with
Keith
a voice
anyone,
of his own.
Yeah.
As Keith. Yeah. Tell me you don't recognize us playing three bars in. Give me a break.
Easily.
Like, oh my God. So, like, I'm such a fanatic. I sub for him at USC.
Oh, that's
so
great, man.
Oh, yeah. So when you know, I have to like keep a straight face and like, you know, he showed me, okay, this is what I teach them and this is what we do. And then when I showed up to class, I would drill this. I'm like, can you show me the shit he's like teaching you here? So I could, no, dude, they gave me PDF files. You can laugh.
Oh,
I was
man.
Like, I want those. I'm sorry. I want those too. I know I'm subbing for him. I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
Like,
give me
I
your
want
homework.
That's right.
You still have to have your hero worship in there, you know?
Are you kidding me? Oh, yeah. My God.
That was their excuse for the next class with Russell. They're like, Russell took our homework.
Yeah, exactly. That's beats the dog ate my homework. Your sub ate my homework. Yeah. And to be honest with you, it's so interesting. Sometimes I'll share this experience very quickly. Some students are very advanced intermediate and some beginner students, right? So So I would sit there. I'm like, okay, so what did you guys do? And like, okay, we did this, this and that. And like, I see how I would go about teaching something like this myself.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, so show me how he goes about teaching you this.
Yeah.
And then the guy or the girl shows me an exercise. And I was like, boy, if there's a way to lay a fundamental metal rod into one's education on which you could build a palace later.
Yeah, man.
That's how you... Because the guy, Russ, is so thorough.
Yeah.
And so just...
He's such a good teacher, man. I mean, besides being
such a good teacher.
Yeah. He's coming from like the pillars of like Bach fucking chorale.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He's just like, that's crazy. How I'm going to teach shit.
It's very unique.
Voice leading. Yeah. Like, I have a feeling that if you drop him on a piano from the top of a building, he'll still drop in voice leading. Like, he'll still voice lead. You know,
like a cat sprawled out and it's like,
yeah. Yeah. The guy's speaking of Bach chorales, like, the guy doesn't know how to play without voice leading.
No,
like the guy voice leads everything like a machine, and it's gorgeous.
Every finger goes somewhere.
Yeah,
intentionally.
Yeah, and it's just exactly, and it's and then so yeah. I don't know how we got with. Oh, so back to your website, like just that video alone, let alone other ones that I've seen on there. It's just like, yeah, man, please. That's such a great thing that you would sit all of us down, and you know,
we're trying,
and,
man,
and do it. It's like,
thank
God.
You.
I mean, I hope I contributed a little bit. If look, someone like Russ is up in there, like I know you. Do you have no idea how many people I send, and they ask me for advice? I'm like, look. And I'm like, and I'm about to start explaining his shit. I'm like, you know what? Why don't you go?
Yeah.
And like, if you trust my advice, let this following be the advice. Go
for
purchase
like a third of a tank of gas. You know, you can
exactly. Yeah. Like, just go purchase that. Let that be Rustlin's advice. Let that be the advice you came for.
It.
Go buy Russ Ferrante's DVDs, like on that website. Like, oh, like,
thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Of course, you're a great service to the community, all of us.
But we'll wrap about the other stuff. Just call me, or we'll set up a time.
I will, brother.
And you know, I can talk you through it. I mean, obviously, I've done a lot of this, and I can kind run you through, at least put you in the right direction pretty quickly, actually. And,
thank you, brother.
But you know, for now, I think we've had a great chat, man. Thanks so much for coming on, man. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, guys. This was really interesting to think about a lot of these things in the context of COVID-19 and all these things we sort of covered. Thank you for having me. This has been really fun.
All right, man. Be well, and we will talk soon.
Thank you, brother. All righty, peace. Bye, man.
Later.
Questions, comments, episode ideas, hate mail. You can get in touch with us by contact form, email, or voicemail, all of which are available at our website, theperformerspathway.com. If one of your questions or topics makes it into the podcast, with your consent, of course, you'll receive a shiny new $10 gift card for use at mymusicmasterclass.com. That's our sister website, which contains over 600 original educational videos from your musical heroes. So we look forward to hearing from you.